The Banner Baseball Show, Paul Mancano and Andy Koska live on a Friday afternoon to discuss the breaking news that baseball's top prospect, Jackson Holliday, is being optioned to AAA Norfolk, and Ryan McKenna is having his contract selected. Andy, we were on this show mere days ago discussing the possibility of Holliday being sent down. We both thought it was unlikely. We both made the case that he should stay. And in the 4 days since, I didn't see anything to change my mind. And yet Holliday is being sent back down to AAA Norfolk after a 2-for-34 start to his big league career. What is your first reaction to this news?
My first reaction was surprised that it was Ryan McKenna coming back up. We'll get into Jackson Holliday. You know, we'll talk plenty about that. But, you know, calling up an outfielder, I know Danielle Entuck was just the Norfolk, and she reported that McKenna has practiced a little bit at second base, which I know gives him a little bit more versatility, but really an outfielder by trade. So this is not a like-for-like switch, but I am surprised. I mean, just looking here, you know, we have Coey Mayo, another high-ranking prospect. He's only 22, so not that much older. He's hitting 317 with a 973 OPS. And then there's Connor Norby, who would be a like-for-like change at second base, right-handed hitter as well. He's hitting 297 with a 903 OPS. These are guys that seem ready. You know, people thought Jackson Holliday was ready, and I still think Jackson Holliday was ready. This is just a tough stretch to begin his career, but we'll get into that in a second. So I was a little surprised to see McKenna. I guess the thought process with McKenna is that you have more bench space. You can use him in more of a utility late game role, pinch run, defensive replacement, that sort of thing. It would be interesting though if McKenna gets time at second base. I really doubt that would be the case, but I mean, we'll see. I didn't think Jackson Holliday would be optioned after 34 at bats. So this was a little bit of a surprise to me, and I think I'm probably not alone in that.
I didn't think Jorge Mateo was ever going to see center field as much as the Orioles hyped that up, and lo and behold, he did see center field. So maybe they do have plans to play Ryan McKenna in center field. And you discussed the possibility of Norby, or second base, sorry. You discussed the possibility of Norby and or Mayo coming up, and you can't even make the case that McKenna was already on the 40-man, so it's an easy, because he wasn't. So they selected his contract, which means that if they were to send him back down after a stint, that would require somebody being designated for assignment, similar to Coby Mayo and Connor Norby, both guys that are not on the 40 man. And it's just absurd the number of outfielders they have on this roster right now, because until we see McKenna at second base, he's considered an outfielder. Heston Kerstad got brought up to replace Austin Hayes when he went to the IL. It is very outfield heavy, this roster right now. And the Orioles are an organization that likes to make those like for like changes, like you said. Let's talk about Jackson Holliday, though, before we get into what Ryan McKenna's role could be on this team, because we talked about his early struggles, and the strikeouts were absolutely the most concerning factor and the most concerning thing that when you looked at Jackson Holliday play, that he was racking up the strikeouts and 2-for-34, but he was starting to hit the ball harder. StatCast had him hitting that second single at 104 miles an hour. Defensively, he was rated very much above average, according to StatCast, and that passed through the eye test as well. He looked great, made some nice diving stops at second base, other than really his first game in Boston, where a couple pop-ups dropped in the outfield. He looked very solid at second base. He was batting ninth, so he wasn't really harming this offense. I thought he was starting to turn the corner, and it appears that the Orioles disagreed and maybe thought that this was the best thing for his confidence, was to send him back down to AAA Norfolk and watch him mash AAA competition again.
Yeah, just a quick side note. The Orioles just announced that John Means will start Sunday in AAA again. So we'll have another rehab start in AAA. So Albert Suarez is the most likely option for Sunday. But to get back to the actual question there. I did think that, you know, Jackson, defensively, you were not giving up very much. In fact, you know, it's above average defender, according to StatCast. Yeah. 95th percentile in range, outs above average, according to StatCast. His fielding run value was positive 2 at 91st percentile. So defensively, he was fine. He wasn't letting the struggles at the plate transfer to the field. And that's a big, you know, you see that with players sometimes. And I think it is a big, you know, you can commend Jackson Holliday as a young player to not let that transfer over at all. Offensively, the strikeout numbers are still there. Some of those were, you know, tough calls.
Yes.
You know, where I think in AAA, he would have challenged those strike calls and won most of them. Some of them were not in his favor, and he's not somebody to expand the zone. He knows what the zone is. He has a great understanding of that. Some of them he did just get overpowered though. And, I know he took in KC, you know, he took a strike, strike three, you know, on a fastball in the zone. That wasn't a great appearance. He has swing and miss as well. We've seen a little bit. But overall, we've seen his exit velocity creep up. His bat to ball skills are coming around. His defense wasn't an issue. Plus the fact that he was batting ninth, you were not relying on him to basically supercharge this offense. And instead, this offense has scored 5 or more runs in 14 of their 24 games. You know, this is an offense that has done fine, even with Jackson Holliday scuffling, because they're hitting the, you know, cover off the ball, most of them, with Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Colton Cowser, Ryan Mountcastle, Ryan O'Hearn, the list goes on. I mean, most of the rest of the lineup is playing superbly well. So there was cover for him. At the end of the day, I mean, we'll hear more, you know, I'm sure from Mike Elias later about why this decision was made at this point. I would just say this is not the end for Jackson Holliday. Like, do not think that a demotion is, it's a little bit of a setback. You know, yeah, is it not the way he would have wanted things to go? Correct. But he's 20 years old. And I tweeted out earlier, you know, just looking at Colton Cowser and Grayson Rodriguez. Think about Cedric Mullins a couple years ago. Like, players who are established big leaguers or becoming established big leaguers in the case of Colton Cowser, they struggled in the majors and they got sent back down, and then they figured it out. They came back up, and, you know, now they're playing really well. So I don't think this is, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to be that big of a deal. He will probably be up by the end of the, you know, before the end of the season, before the midway point of the season, I would assume. And this will be a blip in the road, like we talked about Grayson, with his, you know, first 10 starts being up and down, and then came back. And then once he came back, he was a completely different pitcher with a different fire, just his motivation to prove who he is. And I think, you know, Jackson is a, you know, likes, he's very competitive, as every single one of these guys is, and not a, you know, unique trait. I think this will, you know, light a little bit of a fire. And, you know, obviously he was self-motivated before this. He doesn't need any prodding, but he will go down and he will figure out what the heck was going on. And, you know, maybe he will make tweaks. I don't think he needs huge overhauls. Like, this is not a case where you need a large, I've seen, you know, I think Ben McDonald mentioned it the other day, you know, and I've seen people on Twitter saying, you know, get rid of the leg kick. I don't think that's the answer, you know, because this is a guy that's groomed that swing since he was 12, and the leg kick is really good for timing. And we've seen Gunnar Henderson's leg kick, and like, guys have leg kicks, and it's totally fine. And so maybe all he does is get his foot down a millisecond earlier, and that's the adjustment. But I don't think you scrap the entire leg kick and take away your power completely, because that's what would happen most likely.
Yeah. So what does he really have to prove when he gets sent back down? Because he was already hitting the cover off the ball. He was already hitting 333 when it got the call up from AAA Norfolk. He hit 313 in spring training. And we were making the case that he should have made the team out of spring training. He didn't. He goes back down to AAA Norfolk for 10 days and comes right back up. Does he just have to do it all over again? Or is there one specific thing you think the Orioles are looking for to say, all right, he's ready to come back up. His confidence is restored. He's made X adjustment at the plate. He has changed, you know, the timing of his swing. Is there one particular thing that you think he needs to do?
This is the hardest part, because you're at this point, you're going to be nitpicking so heavily. you know, before this, he didn't make the opening day roster because he was new to second base and he hadn't faced many left-handed pitchers.
Yeah.
He goes down, plays all of what, 11 games in the minors, maybe 10. Doesn't even face that many lefties in that stretch. But they were good enough then to call him up with that much of a sample size. Yeah. And now you're going to send him back down. And I guess you'd want him to cut out strikeouts completely. You know, that would be the most, you know, obvious thing. Right. But guys struck out, you know, it's not the end of the world. But yeah, I guess it's a swing and miss, because what else, you know, he's going to go down, and if he does exactly what he did before, are you going to call him up after 10 games? Because right. that's what you did last time. So I'm struggling to see exactly what, and again, you know, we'll cede to Mike Elias. Mike, and I'll say this, you know, Mike has a good track record of developing prospects and calling them up at the right time and making the decision to send them back down. I mean, it was not a fun decision last year to send Colton Cowser down. It was not fun to leave him off the postseason roster. It seems to have worked. You know, now you were getting Colton Cowser in a way that he looks totally comfortable and is having so much power at the plate, and you know, just he looks like a rookie of the year contender. So I don't, you know, I don't mean to, you know, it's easy to second guess, you know, people when we're in our position, but the track record from Mike is also really good. So, yeah. You know, he's kind of given a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, you know, that he probably knows what he's doing, but, I'm fascinated in what does he have to do differently? What convinces you? Because if he goes down there and hits 333 and walks more than he strikes out, and has some power, you know, and flashes that he can do it against lefties, is that any different than what he already proved in the minors? Like, when are you going to make that jump of, hey, he's ready again? I don't know. I'm completely clueless as to that. That was a long-winded answer to say I have no idea.
Yeah, it's because that's what he did the first time. 10 games in AAA Norfolk, 333, OPS over one, walked more than he struck out. And it's funny, he heads back down to Norfolk after 10 games in the big leagues. A lot fewer plate appearances because he was batting ninth instead of near the top of the order. And because he wasn't facing a lot of lefties, he was getting pulled in some instances. But he had checked seemingly every box down in Norfolk. And now he just has to essentially do it again. The interesting...
In the majors?
Yeah, 10 games.
It just feels like...
And felt like a lot longer.
Yeah, I'm getting just like off script. I'm sorry. But like, I think it felt like every step he took was hyper analyzed by me and others. Like, I'm at fault. You know, it's like he sneezed and we were like, ooh, you know, like it seemed like that was what we did. And it just you know, I can't imagine the pressure the kid was under, and he handled it so well. And, you know, the results weren't there, but he didn't, you know, it wasn't like he got, it didn't seem like it got in his head. No. Of course, we're in the clubhouse for an hour. We're in the clubhouse post game. So maybe, you know, internal discussions, they could kind of tell he was, you know, overthinking, you know, we'll find out more, but he seemed to really carry himself well. And he understood, I mean, one of the last things, you know, he said to me was that, like, this is going to be a good thing. You know, it sucks in the moment, but when he is 25, which is hilarious, so that's 5 years away. That's a long time. When he's 25 and has four full seasons of major league service time and is already arbitration eligible, like, it's going to be, that's so funny that he's going to be so young.
He's only going to be 25. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny. I think he will look back on this as like, that wasn't fun. But wow, do I know how to handle a slump?
Yeah,
and that, exactly. At the end of the day, couldn't, you know, there's worse things for a 20-year-old, and it didn't impact. you know, this is a team that needs to win now. The O's won. They won anyway. You know, they put together, you know, exactly. You know, this is a, they've won series back, you know, back-to-back series, you know, like they're playing well. So this is not like it has some huge repercussions on Baltimore's chances in the AL East, which will be a dogfight. It absolutely will be, because the Yankees are good. But I don't think at the end of the day that this hurt the O's, and I hope it didn't hurt Jackson at all.
Right. And the one difference that, you know, we saw, you mentioned Colton Cowser being sent back down. Heston Kerstad obviously dipped his toe into the big league waters last year and then didn't make the team out of spring training, but is now back with the big league team. Those guys weren't the number one prospect in baseball. You know, they were the members of the Orioles top 30. They were members of the Orioles top 10 prospect list. But the Orioles have now had three number one prospects in all of baseball: Adley Rutschman, then Gunnar Henderson, Jackson Holliday. Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson went through their fair share of struggles in their rookie seasons. The Orioles never sent those guys back down. Now, they didn't struggle to the same degree that Holliday did. They didn't hit 059 in their first 10 games. But the Orioles always gave those guys a little bit more leash and a little bit more leeway to work themselves out of it. It helped that the Orioles weren't all that competitive in 2022. Sure, they ended up being close to a wild card by the end of the season, but at least heading into that season, development of prospects was primarily their main focus. And it also helped that, you know, but by the same token, they weren't under as much pressure at this point last year when Gunnar Henderson was going through his struggles. They're under more pressure to win now. And Jackson Holliday did struggle more than Adley and Gunnar. But the Orioles sending the number one prospect down already after he's made his debut is a new development for this team, and it's a new way to handle this. They just haven't done it yet. But there are a lot of external factors and a lot of decisions there. In terms of the service time that you mentioned, you know, the Orioles called him up a day before they had to, essentially, in order to give him a full year's worth of service time for 2024. Now that he's being sent back down, he will not get that full year of service time, which means that if he comes back up and somehow wins Rookie of the Year, the Orioles will not be eligible for draft pick compensation. And also, they are poised to have him under team control for an extra season at the end of this. Mm-hmm. That may have played a part in all of this. You know, he goes out to a 2-for-34 start. His chances of winning AL Rookie of the Year aren't totally gone, but certainly it's a hole that he has to climb out of. And he saw another player on his own team maybe jump him in terms of AL Rookie of the Year odds, Colton Cowser. But he now will not get a full year's worth of service time, assuming he's going to stay down for
more than one day.
Yeah, more than one day, which is what he's going to do. So that is certainly something to discuss here. Let's talk about Ryan McKenna, though, real briefly.
We want to bring that up. I was going to say that this is and I'm sorry to cut you off. That was
really rude. Dive right in.
I was going to think, like, this is a team that's in a win now mode. They're going to be more aggressive with roster moves, which is part of the reason why they called up Jackson Holliday when they did, thinking that he would give more offensive boost than Tony Kemp as a left-handed hitting second baseman. And it's part of the reason why they sent him down, because if he's not producing, they feel like they're in a win now mode. Let's call up somebody that can impact this team. Ryan McKenna is a great clubhouse guy. Is a good defensive replacement. He's a major league average hitter at best. He's hitting right now. He's hitting .244 in AAA. So the one thing that feels contrary to me, and you know, again, I don't know all the specifics at this very moment. What feels contrary to me is that they're being aggressive in the way that they are making the roster moves with, you know, Holliday going back down. I'm curious that McKenna was the one they decided ultimately was going to give them the best boost, considering he's proven to be a reliable, if not standout, major league hitter. And you have two prospects in Connor Norby and Kobe Mayo who project to be above average major league hitters and are performing at a really high level in AAA comparably. maybe part of this is because they don't want to have to go through another debut, the learning curve right away, because there would be naturally struggles you expect from a, you know, Mayo and Norby. Just as well as Gunnar Henderson went through it. Really not when he first arrived, but the first full season, Adley went through it, and Holiday obviously went through it. So maybe that plays a role, as you don't necessarily want to go like for like with rookies and have another guy who you're expecting big things from go through, you know, an adjustment, which is why you bring Ryan McKenna, who you kind of know what you're getting. You know you're going to have a career 220 hitter. A 221, career 221 hitter who is going to give you good outfield defense and a pinch run ability.
Sure.
Maybe that's what they decided to do. I just feel like it's a little bit contrary to the aggressive choices that they have otherwise made.
Yeah. It is, like you said, it would require a new learning curve for one of those rookies coming in. I also just wonder how long McKenna's going to be here for, because you have Austin Hayes still on the IL, who's a right-handed hitting outfielder. You have Heston Kerstad up here right now. I wonder if and when, you know, when Austin Hayes eventually comes back from his calf strain, is McKenna the one that gets, he would have to be designated for assignment, or would they just option Kerstad in order to not worry about having to designate somebody for assignment, and then they would have McKenna and Hayes back on the big league roster just as it ever was, just as it's like 2023 all over again. That'll be an interesting decision that they have to make at some point. In the meantime, you know, they're having to put together a lineup right now that is a little bit short of infielders. We've already seen a lineup for today, and it has Ramon Urias batting ninth and playing third base. I do wonder if Ramon Urias and Jorge Mateo are just going to see more playing time. The Orioles, it's not like the Orioles are scheduled to face a ton of lefties. They face a lefty tomorrow on Saturday in JP Sears, but they face a righty tonight in Ross Stripling. Thought it was going to be a great opportunity for Jackson Holiday, by the way, against Ross Stripling, who has really struggled this year, and a righty. I thought we were going to see Holiday's breakout game tonight, but not to be. But they face a lefty tomorrow and then another righty on Sunday. So I do wonder how, if Heston Kerstad's going to get into the lineup more, Ryan O'Hearn. But if that's the case, what do they do in the infield? You know, how are they, because you have Urias and Mateo, who are both righties, how are they going to split up the second base reps with Jordan Westberg, another righty? And are they just going to have to deal with what they got right now? Or is there another move that's going to come in about a week's time? It's they are playing the Oakland A's, I will say. So it's not like the stakes are all that high. They can throw out a less potent offense and probably still come away with a series.
But you need to win. I mean, it is a point where you got to win these games.
Right.
So, like, you need to take care of business against teams like the Oakland A's if you're going to win the AL East this year. Yeah. So, even though that they probably can, you know, they could have had Jackson Holiday out there go 0-15 this series and probably won all the games. You still need to, you know, you treat every game as, you know, as seriously as the next one. It's just major, you know, it's Major League Baseball. But interesting. I mean, you brought up a lot of interesting points, because right now, you just have a severe lack of infield depth, and you probably
thought with this team.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and you want Santander in the lineup just about every day. You want O'Hearn in the lineup against lefties, or against righties, excuse me, as a lefty. You want Mountcastle in the lineup against either side just about every day. It's going to be tough, because that then has Mountcastle at first, O'Hearn at DH, Santander in right field, which allows you to have, you know, Mateo on the bench probably as kind of the do-it-all bench guy that can fill in other positions. But what if you know, against a lefty, you know, you have O'Hearn out of the lineup, you know, then you have, you know, Mateo in the lineup, especially if you have Santander DH a day, then you really don't have an infielder on the bench. It's kind of interesting, you know, that suddenly there could be games against lefties where you don't necessarily have an infielder on the bench, depending on how they, you know, if Santander has a, has a day that, because you need him off his feet every once in a while as a DH. super fascinating. Yeah. Yeah.
We'll have to monitor it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to watch it. And, you know, people love to nitpick line of construction. So this This is the right time to be a line of construction aficionado.
They're cracking their knuckles. Get ready for the tweets.
The next 10 days are going to be, this is their Super Bowl.
This is their Super Bowl. Exactly. Well, I will let Andy go because he was supposed to be off today and he has done us the favor of hopping on here. And also I got to get to the ballpark to hear what Michael Elias has to say about the fact that Jackson Holliday has been optioned to AAA Norfolk. And of course, Andy and Danielle and John Mioli and Kyle Goon have complete coverage for you on the BaltimoreBanner.com where you can subscribe $1 for 6 months. Give Andy a follow at AF Koska. I'm at Paul Mancano and at All Banner Sports. Please like, review, share, subscribe, all that good stuff for the Banner Baseball Show. And write us a good review. I'll read it out here on the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. For Andy, I'm Paul. Catch you next time.